Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Listeners, will you be taking vacation this summer, or are you too busy with work? Today, we want to talk about workism. It's a term coined by Atlantic staff writer Derek Thompson, who argued in a piece earlier this year in The Atlantic that work is becoming a religion for many Americans. Here with us to talk more about this is Dr. Jana Koritz, a psychologist and founder of Azimuth Psychological, where she specializes in entrepreneur mental health and burnout. Hello.
Hi.
Also with us on the line, Ellen Ruppel-Schell. She's a journalism professor at Boston University and author of The Job, Work and Its Future in a Time of Radical Change. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much.
And listeners, give us a ring on this. Do you think we work too much? Do you feel pressured to work all the time by a boss or coworkers, society, or maybe even family and life needs? Have you ever suffered from burnout, and did you cut back on work to cope? Do you let your work keep you from taking vacation? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. So thinking back to Industrial Revolution, people were required to work really long, hard hours. And then as they gained more money, values changed, different types of jobs came into the market, and family time became a little more respected as important. But it seems like the pendulum is swinging back with people dedicating too much time to work, sometimes maybe because they feel it's part of who they are. Ellen, how do we explain this move back to more work? And is there a difference between work and a job?
Well, those are a lot of very interesting and provocative questions. To begin, the whole notion of a job is a relatively new one, okay? As it was, you know, originally defined in the 16th century, the word job was meant to rob or to cheat. It was kind of a sordid bit of business, you know, meant to extract money from other people. So most people didn't actually aspire to even hold a job. Most Americans, up until the Industrial Revolution, which you just mentioned, were farmers. They didn't really have a job. They were entrepreneurs of a sort. They either owned their land and farmed their land, or they were tenant farmers or laborers on the farm, and these were not high-status jobs. So the whole notion of a job was not something that people actually aspired to. And in fact, until fairly recently, the idea of working very long hours was low status, okay? It was not something that people really chose to do. And obviously, if you were poor and you had no choice, then you went along and did it. But people who could work shorter hours aspired to work shorter hours. So it's a relatively, two things are relatively recent phenomenon. One, the notion of a job as a desirable thing to have as opposed to work. And the other is the long work hours becoming sort of a status symbol.
So okay, Jana, Ellen.
Things.
So Jana, Ellen, it's okay. Ellen just said that there was a time when a job wasn't something, sort of the idea of a job wasn't the thing that you aspired to. And I do wonder, is there a way to dedicate time to craft or passion without it having to be spending time at your job? Do your job and your passion have to be the same thing?
They don't necessarily have to be the same thing. I think what's difficult for a lot of the folks we see at Azimuth is they're in these high-pressure careers, and they're not able to find the time to do both of those things. And so they're spending, right, all this time at work. And if you don't like your job, let's say, or the way we define job now, currently, you're spending 40-plus hours. You know, our folks are spending 60-plus hours doing a job that they may or may not enjoy. And that's a lot. It's a lot of time to do something that you don't like or feel neutral about or even sometimes dislike. And I know my father's favorite ism was, you know, they call it work for a reason. And certainly you don't, I don't think there's an expectation or necessarily a good expectation that one should love their job and it should have to be their passion all the time. But it is a lot of time to commit to something that if you don't really enjoy or enjoy some of the time, you're going to start to feel that in a lot of negative ways.
So listeners, call in. Talk to us about this. How do you feel about your job? Is it the thing you get through to do what you love, or is it the thing that you love? You can reach us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Tom from Andover has called in. Tom, what do you got?
Hi. I just had a quick little thing. I work about like 40 or 50 hours a week and a full-time job, but I'm surrounded by people who work more than me. So just by me working like 8 hours plus a day and then wanting to go home, it makes me look like I'm somewhat lazy just because I'm surrounded by a bunch of workaholics.
So Alan Tom is feeling like he's paling in comparison, but he doesn't want to ride that train. Why do people feel the need to overwork? Where does that motivation come from?
Well, the motivation is an interesting word. Not all of us are motivated, but we feel that we should, just as that caller said. In fact, one relatively famous study talked about people at a firm that went unnamed who actually left their jackets on their chairs to make it seem that they were still at the office, even when they weren't, because they got the impression that everyone else was working 80, 90 hours a week. I mean, really crazy hours. So there, again, overwork, the notion of working long hours has become something of a status symbol. I mean, we kind of think of that as a good. Telling people I can't make it because, I'm so important, I have so much work, I'm vital on the job, has become something of a status symbol. Not everyone really appreciates that, you know, or desires that. And yet, the other piece of why people work long hours is, many people are dissatisfied at their job, as you mentioned. And ironically, more people are dissatisfied or less than satisfied at their jobs now than they were when many people work in factories. Part of the reason for that is that the idea that we have very, very high expectations of what our job should give us, not just a paycheck, but all sorts of things. And when those things are not delivered to us, some of us respond by putting in more hours. We blame ourselves for not having be satisfied by our jobs. And so we say, well, if we just put in more hours, the payoff will come. And, of course, that leads to a vicious cycle, right?
Yeah. Dr. Jana Koritz, and the people that you treat or that you work with, is what Ellen's saying, does that resonate? Are they happy but just exhausted? Or are they on a treadmill and it's not even bringing them joy?
I think by the time people come to us, it's more of the latter. Certainly there are folks who derive a lot of joy from their job, even if they're working 100 hours a week. And that's, you know, a small subset of people, I think. I agree with Ellen in that it has become a status symbol. And I think, though, the folks that we see, it's a lot more about identity, a lot more about the cultural pressure and norms that they're experiencing. I don't think that they necessarily work harder and expect more. I think they do expect a lot anyway, but because, you know, there are trade-offs and there's a reason why they're there in the first place. But a lot of folks have been on a trajectory. They've checked a lot of boxes and they've sort of thought that this is what they should or would like to do. And they are no longer able to sort of feel that anymore. It can be a lot of different things for folks, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But I think those are the folks we tend to see a little bit more of. They're stuck, but it's more of a pressure that is outside their control.
So let's talk to some more listeners. Casey from Quincy, tell us why you called.
I just called today because my work really is my passion. I love my job. I work in early intervention, so I work with kids 0 to 3 with developmental delays, and I love, love, love my job. But I'm actually in the process of looking for a second job because I don't make enough money, and I work a full 40 hours a week. So it's, you know, I think there's economic factors as well, where if people are working like an hourly wage, they have to work longer hours just to make ends meet. And especially here in Massachusetts, it's, you know, even with a two-parent income, it's impossible to survive. So I think that's an important piece of it, too, that people need to make money in order to survive.
So Casey,
I understand the aspects of, yeah.
Well, you love your primary job, but because it doesn't give you what you need economically, you're going to have to take a second job. If it did give you what you needed economically, would you work those extra hours at the job you love, or would you use them for other things?
I would definitely, I mean, well, the thing is, I might use it for the job that I love, but my work is also very emotionally draining. When you talk about burnout, you know, my role is really to support a lot of families in many different aspects, you know, with their child's development, but oftentimes I'm wearing the hat of a psychologist, a social worker, a support system, and, you know, sometimes I work more than 40 hours a week, but I get paid a, you know, standard salary, and for the work that I do, you know, I don't know that the trade-off is fair. You know, we're changing lives on a daily basis, and, you know, there's really no money in it, which is sad, but I would definitely put more hours towards my passion if, you know, it was balanced out with money and I wouldn't burn out so much.
Casey, thanks for calling in. I want to take another call from Stanley from Taunton. Hi, Stanley.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you today?
Well, thanks. Tell me what's on your mind.
What's on my mind about this topic about jobs is that, like me currently right now, I'm a public safety officer at the Jordan Hospital in Plymouth. It's a good job. It pays pretty well, but the thing is about it, it's very stressful. I've noticed that I've taken some of that work atmosphere or just being from work home, and it's been stressing me out. But at the end of the day, I just got to remember that with that job, I'm doing that job to finish school, to pay off school, excuse me, and to, you know, better myself and get myself in a certain position in the next 2 to 3 years. And I've noticed that what the situation that you guys are talking, or the topic you guys are talking about, how, like, how it affects you and if it's something that you want to, you're passionate about. In a way, I am passionate about it, but I know the reason why I'm motivated or passionate to go to this job every single day, not only to gain the experience of possibly being a police officer sometime down the road, it's to, you know, take care of what you need to take care of as someone in their early 20s to make sure that they establish themselves very well going forward. And that's what keeps pushing me. That's what gives me not a fatigue to start, doesn't give me a certain fatigue going in saying, oh, I don't want to be here. It's mundane. It's,
so, Stanley, let me take it from there. Thanks so much. I find that really helpful because it raises a question. I'd like to take Stanley's comments, Dr. Koretz, and kind of bring them to you. What about people who, either because of their aspirations or school debt or a number of situations, they have to work a lot. They have to work a lot now. And so avoiding burnout might actually be a luxury for them. How do they cope with the exhaustion of working so hard?
Yeah, and that's a great question because for a lot of people, you know, our caller is talking about sort of a means to an end. But for a lot of people, there sort of is no end because they're supporting a family, let's say, or they have parents that have medical costs, they have their own mortgage to pay and things like that. And so they're not, you know, the high pace or the high pressure or the job that they have that's paying them to do that. They need to keep that along the lines, you know, for a long time, for the foreseeable future. And so what we talk about a lot is trying to, you know, not necessarily make drastic changes. You know, I think there's a lot of discussion of, you know, well, you shouldn't work 80 hours a week, you should work 40 hours a week. But for a lot of people, that's just not possible, like we're talking about. So how can you integrate things that are important to you? What are your values? What are other things that you like or would help you sort of take those moments or take pauses and sort of integrate those into your day-to-day life, depending on what that means for each person?
So let's hear from another caller after that. Sally from Sandwich, tell us why you called in.
Hi, yeah. So I think a lot of people, especially young people and millennials these days, they don't know how to talk to their bosses about time off. So they're kind of scared to actually take it, and they wind up not really doing it. I think a lot of offices these days, too, they have things like unlimited vacation. And then when you try to go and use it, it doesn't really exist. It kind of falls through. It's not there. And you get a lot of excuses from people in higher management as to why you can't take it that day, and then it just never kind of happens.
So Ellen, Sally raises an important point that I think we have to talk about, which is the role of employers. And we have a classic example of a boss making an employee run ragged. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm trying to get a flight tonight, for tonight, from Miami to New York. Yes, I know there's a hurricane. Yeah, sorry, hold on.
What?
Hello? Miranda, hi. Look, I'm trying to get you a flight, but no one is flying out because of the weather.
Please, it's just, I don't know, drizzling. Someone must be getting out. Call Donatella. Get her jet.
Call everybody else that we know that has a jet. Irv. Call every. This is your responsibility. This is your job.
Get me home.
Ellen, of course, that's a scene from Devil Wears Prada, where Andy breaks away from dinner with her father, frantically trying to get her boss, a very demanding boss, Miranda, an impossible flight back from New York. Now, that's probably a bit extreme, but how do employers contribute to workism and burnout?
I love that scene. That's great.
I kind of do, too.
And I'm not sure it's an exaggeration, actually.
Wow.
I think it's based on reality. So I'm sorry. I was just kind of entranced by that. So I'm sorry. What was your question,
please? Well, so how do employers – I know it is fun to get lost in those. How do employers contribute to burnout, to workism, to that be there, work, work, work?
Well, there's a bunch of different things. I mean, one of them is this whole notion of finding passion on the job, this idea that we all need to find passion. And as I mentioned earlier, that does encourage folks to overwork, even if they financially don't need to, okay? Because, they're looking for passion. They're told that there are intrapreneurs. I don't know if you've heard that word, but that's the idea of being entrepreneurial in service of an employer. So the idea that it's almost as if it's your own company, and so you're going to devote yourself to it sort of day and night to better the company, with the idea that the values of the company and the goals of the company are really your goals. And, of course, they aren't. And we have to keep that in mind as individuals. So on an individual level, how we can control this is to say, no, really, this is not my company. I will do a good job while I'm there for the appropriate number of hours. But I'm not going to delude myself into thinking the win-win for this company is always my win, too. It isn't always my win, too. In terms of employers, I think employers are getting the idea that working long hours does not necessarily mean good hours. And many people really can't be productive for more than a certain number of hours a week or a day. Some people told me it was really no more than 4 hours or 5 hours a day that people could be really productive. One study looked at people's work, working in offices across the country, and they found some people were engaging in as many as 50 meetings a week. I mean, that's really crazy, getting together with people 50 times a week in meetings. This was a terrible waste of time. So, again, I think management scholars are talking about how can we get control of this? How can we treat our workers' time, our employees' time, as not just a commodity that's endless, but something that's of value to both them and to us? And contain ourselves a little bit in the demands that we put on them.
So, Ellen, I want to move to a caller who, maybe to this point about the number of hours worked, whether that's quality over quantity, and what option you have. Barbara from Westwood.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that over the last 35-plus years, I've been in computer system support, being on call 24/7, being a manager of a bunch of people, being woken up at 1 or 2 a.m., and the employer expected that Monday, Sunday, Tuesday, Saturday, didn't matter. And my last position was with a consulting firm. As I felt I was burning out, finally, after all that time, so I asked if I could go part-time. And as a result, they fired me.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, Barbara. And that comes back, Dr. Koretz, to this balance that we've got to strike between advocating for ourselves, our companies having expectations, but also us wanting to find meaning in our work. How do we find the balance between all those things in a way that stays true to ourselves but keeps us employed and keeps us thriving?
Yeah, and that's really the ultimate question, I think. It really depends on the person also and the company that they work for. Sort of like Ellen was discussing, I think there is a sort of a push a little bit to starting to think about our companies starting to think about their employees in a way that might be more helpful in terms of not just offering them food at work and ping pong tables and beer and whatever to keep them there so that people work for a long time, but instead, reaching out to practices like ours and saying, hey, we want to offer, you know, mental health services or, you know, coaching for our employees. We are noticing that they're not being as productive as they used to be, and they are here maybe too much, and maybe you guys can help us with that. And so trying to sort of err on the on more of like a lifestyle or fitness or mental well-being perspective. But I think that's a really complicated question. I wish I had a really succinct answer for it, but it really depends on the individual, their values, their interests, their individual financial situation, their families. So I don't think I can say specifically what the answer is, but certainly it's worth investigating for everybody because that's really where the happiness lies in that balance.
So I want to bring in a clip of Derek Thompson from The Atlantic. He's the one that coined the term workism. And he talked to NPR's On Point about how we value work as humans and in our human interactions.
In D.C., the first question at a party was always, what do you do? In so many cities and in so many classes, the easiest way to learn about someone is to ask them what they do. It's a reflection of workism. It's a reflection of the fact that we have all quietly internalized the idea that the fastest way into a person's brain is through their resume.
Ellen, do we individually create pressure for others to have work define who they are? Is that a cultural problem for us?
Well, as much as I enjoy Derek's work and his thoughts on this, I think we have to be careful about generalizing. I think in some places more than others do we identify so strongly with our jobs. And in more rural parts of America, parts of, for example, Maine, where I spend my summers, right, the first thing that we ask when we get together is not, what do you do? What is your employment? People in Maine and other rural areas often don't ask that question first. Okay, it's considered rude. So I think the primacy of a job in our life is, as you mentioned earlier, a bit of a luxury in some ways for folks living in, you know, the East Coast or the West Coast or certain parts of the United States. But many people cobble together a life of work that does not necessarily even entail a single job. And that's, you know, something to keep in mind. We're all different, right? It's a very heterogeneous nation. But I'm sorry, your question...
No, that's okay. Let me stop you there because I want to turn to Dr. Okay. Koretz for just our last 30 seconds or so and just say, so based on that, as we look forward, what's important for us to value and do to find better balance and meaning?
I think that's an inward question for each person, you know, thinking about what each of us values as an individual person in terms of family. Is it our job? Is it the contents of our jobs? Do we like to be productive? Is it our hobbies? Is it our families? You know, what is it that's important to us that we want to be part of our lives and how we want to actually ideally spend our time? And then figuring out what is possible based on the realities that, you know, life circumstances and culture and your actual job, you know, things that, you know, might be actual constraints. And then if those things aren't aligned, figuring out, are there solutions to this? Are there, you know, alternatives that I can work towards and things like that?
Dr. Jana Koretz, psychologist and founder of Asthma Psychological, where she specializes in entrepreneur mental health and burnout. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Also with us on the line, Ellen Ruppel-Schell, journalism professor at Boston University and author of The Job, Work and Its Future in a Time of Radical Change. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
That's our show. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.